Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Bible class for this week. Tonight we have our brother John Sivier here visiting us to present for us his talk on the with the title "The Frame of a City Upon God's Holy Mount." So, as an introduction to his address this evening, brother John has asked that we read from the prophecy of Ezekiel, and that will be Ezekiel chapter 40. In the first 16 verses. So with that introduction, I now invite your attention to our brother John Sivier to speak to us on the frame of a city upon God's holy mount.
Thank you, Brother Sebastian, and good evening, brethren and sisters and our young people. When you read of the ministry of Christ, you will come across the fact that the beginning of his ministry, he entered into Jerusalem and went into the temple of that day. It was the time of the first Passover of the Lord's ministry. He was to go to three Passovers. We know his time was spent about 3.5 years. When he went into that temple, he overthrew the money changers, he got out that whip, and he said, "You've made my father's house a house of trade." There they were buying and selling my father's house, he said. 3 years later, the Lord came into Jerusalem to be inspected. And as he came from Bethany down to Jerusalem, they thought he would be king, get rid of the Roman power. And so there were the people laying out the fronds of palm trees, and they say, probably branches of olive trees. Here was the king of the Jews, they thought. And he went into the temple. Again, and this time the record's in Matthew, Mark and Luke. It's now the third Passover in his ministry. Of course, in a very short time, they would keep the Passover. When we go to Mark's record, this is what he recorded. And he taught, saying unto them, "Is it not written, my house shall be called of all nations the house of prayer?" He taught the people when he went in, he overthrew the money changers again, but he was teaching the people about the house of prayer. Now, where did he get this terminology of the house of prayer? Well, it's Isaiah 56, verse 7, where Isaiah recorded hundreds of years earlier, "Even then will I bring to my holy mountain and make them joyful in my house of prayer," Isaiah was told. God's house of prayer. "Their burnt offerings and their sacrifices shall be accepted upon mine altar. For mine house shall be called a house of prayer for all people." The house of prayer. When we go to Isaiah chapter 2, words we know pretty well, what do we read about this time and this house? Isaiah 2, verses 2 to 4. "Shall come to pass in the last days," our day, "that the mountain of Yahweh's house shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it." All nations. Not all nations flowing to the UN assembly, but all nations flowing to Jerusalem. And many people shall go and say, come ye, and let us go up to the mountain of Yahweh, to the house of the God of Jacob, the God of Israel. And he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem. And he shall judge among the nations and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither learn war anymore. We know those words very well. But the key thing in Isaiah's record for us this evening is let us go up to the house of prayer. Let us go up to Yahweh's house. Let us go up to the temple. Where is it? In Jerusalem. When did Ezekiel receive the vision of the temple? Here's Isaiah's words. Well before the two tribes went into captivity in Babylon. You remember in Isaiah's day and after Hezekiah readings right now at that time period, the 10 tribes were going into captivity, taken to the north, Assyria. Later on, the two tribes would go into captivity, and that would be the kingdom of God coming to an end as constituted back in Sinai in Moses' day. And so the two tribes were taken into captivity over into Babylon. And when we read of the Jewish exiles, they were in Babylon, you remember, for 70 years, just as Jeremiah had prophesied. So when the 10 tribes went into captivity, Isaiah was the prophet, the key prophet. When the two remaining tribes went into captivity under Babylon, under Nebuchadnezzar, who are the great prophets? Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel. That's a big section of the Old Testament talking about a time period really not much more than the 70 years. Three great prophecies. Well, the Jewish exiles were in Babylon here, 539 to 430 BC. And if you come down the river Euphrates, here's the Persian Gulf as it is today. Here was Ur. Remember, Abraham came out of this region. And when we go to Ezekiel chapter 1, when Ezekiel opened his record, it says how it came to pass in the 30th year and so on. Lots of dates all the way through Ezekiel indicating the time period. We're not into that this evening. But he was among the captives. So Ezekiel's over in Babylon. Jeremiah is back in Jerusalem. Daniel was already over in Babylon. He was taken over as a 17-year-old. Daniel and his three friends and many of the other elite, the smart boys and the tradesmen and so on, they were taken into captivity at the beginning. Finally, Ezekiel's over there. Two great prophets in Babylon, and Ezekiel left in Jerusalem with the poor. And Ezekiel said, as he began to record his great prophecy, I was among the captives by the river of Kiba. Now, if you look up in the internet and try and find where Kiba is, you get lots of different places, but this is the one that sounds more accurate. There's the city of Babylon. You have the Tigris River here and the Euphrates up here. And this area around here seemed to be where the Jewish settlements were. And they, in the records, find that there were lots of canals and parts of the river that were, well, redirected really into farming areas from the Euphrates or from the Tigris. So this whole area was quite a fertile basin. And they say there's a canal called the Kiba Canal here. So it would seem this is where the Jewish exiles were. They weren't captives in the sense of being locked up or anything. They lived in their own communities. They had their own freedoms, their houses. They built their own houses. They could worship. Interestingly, when they returned, they didn't worship idols anymore. You remember how Ezekiel indicated the judgments of God came upon that city, Shekinah glory taken away, the cherubic glory. They were worshipping everything. But when they came out of captivity later, only God was worshipped. One of the positives of that time. Well, we then come to Ezekiel chapter 40. There's a lot in between chapter 1 and chapter 40. But when we come to Ezekiel 40, which we read this evening, at verse 2, notice verse 1 in the 25th year of the captivity, again recording, and so you can date all these records. But in verse 2, in the visions of God, he was taken into the land of Israel. Now he's over at Babylon. And in a vision, he's taken to Jerusalem. He brought me into the land of Israel. He had a vision once before when he was taken to Jerusalem, and it showed him that city would be smitten. Nebuchadnezzar would destroy Jerusalem. Now he's got another vision. It's taken back, it says, into the land, but it's to Jerusalem in the end. And he set me upon a very high mountain by which was as the frame of a city. That's where we've got our title for this evening. It's not really a clear statement in that verse. You'll notice perhaps in your margin, he set me upon a very high mountain by which was the frame of a city. Now, my margin and some of yours will have where it's got by which, upon which. He set me, and again the word there, upon, really should be near. He set me near a high mountain upon which was a frame of a city. So that's a more accurate statement of that verse. I'll come back. And here we see a frame of a city upon a mountain, as depicted, which many of us have seen over the years. So there's Ezekiel, the frame of a city. Now, what were cities like in those days? Well, they had walls, they had towers, they had buildings. Often buildings were on the wall. There were open spaces within a city. And so Ezekiel says, what I saw was like a frame of a city. He didn't just see a little village or a building. He just saw it like a frame of a city. That was the language that he was using. A city like dwelling upon a mountain. And it was visions of Elohim. And the word vision, the Hebrew, is like a mirror or a looking glass. That is, you see a reflection in a mirror. Well, what he saw was like a reflection of the real thing. And when you go through these chapters, what Ezekiel saw in this frame of a city, he saw the city in operation. It wasn't just a desolate area, a city with no one in it. He saw things happening in the city. And it was like a mirror image of the real thing. It was as if he was actually there in the day when that temple was in operation. So Ezekiel was now to view the mirror likeness of the kingdom. He had seen the vision of the destruction of the temple and Jerusalem of his day, and now he was to see the likeness of the kingdom and Christ and the saints and the temple. And we too, brethren, sisters and young people, need to have a vision. Need to try and see these things. We may not get things dead right. We won't know when we get to the kingdom and see the temple built. Oh, we were pretty right there. We weren't so accurate over here. It doesn't matter, does it? The thing is to have a feel for the temple, have a vision, what we might see happening. That's what's important. Now, sometimes we get the quotation in Proverbs, where there is no vision, the people perish. That vision is a different word altogether, where there's no direct prophecy. This is not talking about just a prophecy. Prophecy's there. But this is a mirror image of the actual temple in operation, as we'll see, God willing, to a degree over the classes. So let us endeavour to view the mirror likeness of the real thing as we go through this study. Something that's about to occur in the very near future. The house of prayer, the temple, all nations going to it. Might be hard to see, but then 12 months ago no one could see COVID coming and this whole world is a mess. Now you've got Trump and Biden going hammer and tong. Who knows what God and the angels have for them? Who's the one who's going to be next president of America? Whoever it is, the West America is being brought to its knees like the rest of the world. One little tiny virus. I used to think that maybe when God wanted to bring the earth to its knees, all he had to do was increase a few solar flares from the sun and wipe out some satellites, and suddenly you wouldn't have a computer working anywhere and the whole world would be brought to its knees because no computers, no life. But we've seen that little tiny virus that you can't even see is bringing the nations to their knees. And we've often wondered, how is it that the West, and particularly America, could not withstand the Russian Gogian invasion? Well, she's going to be brought to her knees beforehand. That nation would be divided after this election. Who will be in charge? Who knows what God's got in mind for the president? We do know that what Trump delivered, Obama couldn't. Obama was pro-Palestinian, Trump pro-Israel. Now you've got the Abraham Accord. That's Ezekiel 38. Sheba and Dedan, along with Israel, all coming together, East versus West. Now let's get back to this. Verse 3. Ezekiel chapter 40, verse 3. And he brought me thither. And he brought Ezekiel in from the east side of this frame of a city. And behold, there was a man. There's a man standing in the gate whose appearance was like the appearance of brass. And when we go back to Numbers 21, remember the serpent on the brass? The brazen serpent on the pole, a serpent of brass. We read in the New Testament that was pointing to Christ. And there was Christ on the pole. And here this man has the appearance of brass. If you take some brass, it's really copper in this Old Testament, not brass as we know it today, but copper. You get copper and snap copper, it's a pinkish colour inside. It's the colour of man, colour of flesh. So here's the man, the one we remember every week, the one through whom we can ask forgiveness of sins. Because he was hung on a pole and had done no sin. So here this man of brass is really the Lord Jesus Christ in this vision. So in effect, in the vision, this man of one, there was a man whose appearance was the appearance of brass. He had a line of flax in the hand and a measuring reed in the other hand, he's standing in the gate. Now, a line of flax, of course, a flax is a length that can measure big distances. A reed is much smaller. And we read down a little bit, and it said in verse 5, in the man's hand, a measuring reed of 6 cubits.
Now, the cubit. I really should get Tim, shouldn't I? Out you come, Tim. Oh, I've waited a long time for this. I've been retired 22 years since. So put your hand out, mate. Oh. No, you do that and I'll come up underneath. So no, put it up this way. What was a cubit? From the elbow to the fingertip. Mine is smaller still. But it doesn't say that, does it? There's a cubit and
a
hand breadth. Up we go again. A cubit, put your hand across the top. Yep, there it is. Cubit and a hand breadth. That was the cubit. I wonder. Christ's one. Christ's hand, that's the measure of a man. Now, how big was the reed?
6.
So there was the man standing in the gate with a measuring reed in his hand. And the measure throughout the record of Ezekiel's temple, the measure is the reed, not the cubit. And in some places you'll see in the AV, cubits in italics, because they struggled to know what the measure was. But when it's talking about an overall measurement, it's the reed. So when later on you get to the altar, it has cubits and it should be reeds. They've got cubits in italics, and it's just doesn't make sense when you use the word cubit. So here, when Ezekiel came up, on the eastern side, up the eastern steps, and there's the man standing with a reed in his hand. Now, when Sebastian read that chapter, it was full of cubits and reeds and numbers, and I wonder how many people had a clue what it said. And probably, unless you've got something marked in your Bible, you would struggle to follow all those measurements. And sometimes people say, oh, it's just too hard. Too much. Just all numbers and cubits and reeds, and I haven't got a clue. Many years ago, the first time I did the study, it was at Cumberland, and I asked to do the temple, and they said, no, that was one of the arguments. It just confuses everybody, all these statistics and cubits and reeds. But they let me have a go for 1 year for 5 classes, and the next year got another 5. We did 10 and covered the whole description of Ezekiel. Because when you go through that, there are 260 verses on the temple. You think of that. 260 verses in the Bible is dealing with one building. Surely that must mean it's pretty important to have Ezekiel verse after verse after verse record what he saw, what he heard and so on when he was taken on a tour of that temple, that frame of a city. Verse 4. The man said unto me, Son of man, behold with thine eyes, and hear with thine ears,
and set thine heart upon all that I shall show thee. So in effect, God is saying to us tonight, you set your eyes, behold with your eyes, hear with your ears, and set your heart upon the things you're going to read in Ezekiel's description of the temple. The eyes. It's a symbol really that denotes knowledge or understanding. You see a picture with the eyes. There's a personal vision for Ezekiel. And God is saying, see, Ezekiel, you see this very clearly. And hence you'll have an understanding of what you're going to see. Yeah, it reminds, Jeff and I would be used to this. When kids got into trouble, you look at their eyes. You can tell straight away. Shutters go up, all sorts of things happen. But you look at someone's eyes. Tells you a lot about their character. Well, here, Ezekiel was told, behold with your eyes. And then there's the ear. Hear with thine ears. Now, the ear in scripture and history and records of old was associated with obedience. Remember, slaves used to have a boring of the ear, which meant that slave belonged to that owner. That slave had to obey that owner. And there was a boring of the ear, went straight through the ear, a little permanent mark. The importance of obedience. So Ezekiel was told things as well as he saw things. And then the heart. Set your heart upon all I'm going to show you. And the heart denotes affections and values. And we need to set our values and our affections on things like this. This is where our future's going to be. 1,000 years involved in that temple. When the word goes out, as Isaiah 2 said, when the law goes out, the word and the law, that is, judgments, righteous rulership and one religion emanates out of Jerusalem in the days of the kingdom, we'll be involved in that. And from time to time we'll go back to the temple. And we'll sit down with our Lord. That's the focal point of our future life. So let us become quite engrossed in this vision. Then what was he told? For the intent that I might show them unto thee art thou brought hither, declare all that thou seest to the house of Israel. So he was to tell Israel there in their captivity all the things that he saw and heard. And here's a summary of it. And today we sit in this room and we can see what Ezekiel would have given to the captives. Well, it said there in verse 5, of course, behold, there's a wall on the outside of the house round about, and in the man's hand this measuring reed. And then you recall at the end of verse 2, the frame of a city. He saw it as a frame of a city. Now, what's the big city for Ezekiel? Well, it's Babylon. Just before we go to that, I missed this slide. What's that about? Where was it? On the cross. What was it in? Three languages. What did it say? King of the Jews. They thought when he came to the city, he's going to be the king. Then set himself up as king. Remove Rome. He's the king of the Jews. Well, in the day of the temple, he's king. So there's the reed. There are 6 large cubits, a cubit and a hand breadth. That's over 3 metres. 3.12. Now, in ancient times, the cubit varied. If you go to Babylon and Egypt and Hebrews, they had a short cubit and a longer cubit. The various cubits weren't fixed in any specific length. And sometimes it was the cubit of the king.
Well, here's the king, the king of the whole earth. And that's why I think it's his forum. Well, here's the frame of the city. And we read in the record, if we go over to Ezekiel 42, and when we come to verse 16, see, he was taken on a tour. It's sort of not starting at one spot and then just walking in an area and ending at the end somewhere. He goes in, he goes through buildings, he goes to the altar, he goes to the outer wall, he goes to the north, he's at the south, he's all over the place on this tour. Well, at one particular time, it says in chapter 42, he measured the east side of this frame of a city with the measuring reed. 500 reeds was the length of the east side. And then you go into the next verse and the next verse and the next verse, and one by one he went around each side measuring 500 reeds. 500 of that. That was the frame of the city. Well, there's Babylon of Ezekiel's day. The great Ishtar Gate, entrance into the city, the great walls around the city. Of course, is not this great Babylon that I have built, Nebuchadnezzar boasted? Read about that not long ago. And there was Belshazzar writing on the wall, and the city was taken in one night. Well, here's a plan of the city. And if you take the 500 reed square frame of the city of Babylon, the city that Ezekiel would understand. No wonder he called it the frame of the city. It was the size of the city of Babylon, the main city. Here was the River Euphrates, of course, but the main city was in here. And then, of course, you come to Adelaide, this great city, the frame of a city, fits from North Terrace to South Terrace. It's 1 mile square, 1.6 kilometres. So here's the frame of a city. So if you go down West Terrace, then there's Pulteney Street. You're nearly up to Pulteney Street. There's the frame of a city. It's Adelaide. So the next time you're going to Adelaide, not that you always want to go into that place, but next time, try walking down the full length of King William Street. You'll go down the side, one side of the temple. There's the frame of a city. Now, if you go back to chapter 40 and at verse 22... halfway through that verse, well, first of all, in verse 20, he went to the north gate. Now, remember, when he entered, when Ezekiel first saw the man, he came into the east gate. On his tour, he's taken to the north. And the middle of verse 22, they came to the gate and they went up unto it by 7 steps. And then you come to verse 26 or verse 24, then he brought me toward the south, and down in verse 26 there were 7 steps up from the south. And you think of number 7. What's 6? Flesh, man. 7? Spiritual perfection, isn't it? 6,000 years of man, the 7,000, the millennium, kingdom of God on earth. And in this temple, always, from the entrance to the temple, always there's a movement up. Always going up. And the first movement is up 7 steps. And when the worshippers come into that temple, they'll be taught a lot of these principles. Maybe the number seven will be pointed out specifically. Why seven steps? We're not told anything about their size, but we are told the number. Seven. And here's the entrance. Seven steps. This is Brother Sully's drawing. When you see that diagram, you'll notice that there are four blocks here, and that is only at the north side of the temple. There are no blocks on the south, and there are no blocks on the east or west, only on the northern side. So when that is drawn, then that's representing only the entrance on the north of a gate. And when you read of this word gate, he comes up to a gate. It's singular or plural. It's a bit like sheep. You can say sheep, one sheep, 10 sheep. One gate. The Hebrew word can mean many gates. We don't know how many gates there will be. Conjecture is there, and Brother Sully came up with a number, but we're not actually told exactly how many gates, but the word can be singular or plural. Now, what's so important about a gate? Well, if you come back to the Temple of Babylon, there's the Ishtar Gate. Pergamon Museum, there it is, reproduced in the Pergamon Museum, the Ishtar Gate. Massive entrance into the city. Now, of course, ancient times had walls and had gates. To get into the city, you had to go through the gate. But let's think about the principle. When you come to a meeting in one of our ecclesial halls, who's the first person you see? The doorkeeper. How important is the doorkeeper? Over the years, sometimes sort of the doorkeeper, well, that gets given to someone who's not a speaker or a chairman or not important. Well, you can be a doorkeeper. You get your first impression of an ecclesia when you meet the person at the door. It's no difference in business or anything. When you go into a building, your first impression is how you feel when you enter the foyer or how you're received at the welcoming area or the desk or the person behind the desk. When you go into some business and there's a secretary there, you get a feeling for that business by how they treat you. So, brethren, when you're on the door, remember, your impression and how you welcome that visitor will leave a lasting impression on any visitor, brother or sister or friend. So the gate is really very important. No wonder Ezekiel spends a huge length of in his record about the gate. Now, the word gate here really means more than just a gate, more than just a door. It comes from a word meaning to cut or to split or to divide. It's an opening in the wall. It's an entrance. And when you come into this entrance, this will be the first impression someone will get when they enter into the temple. Now, there's definitely more than one gate in verse 18, and the pavement by the side of the gates, plural there. So it's definitely more than one gate, but the number's not given. Just as a matter of interest, some of you have been to the Pergamon Museum. When you look at the carvings, these are like, they're all tiles, but they come out, they're not flat. So you see all the magnificent artistry on those walls and that gate. It must have been absolutely majestic. I wonder what the temple will be. This is like no one's ever seen. Now, nowhere in this record do you read anything about gold, but Solomon's temple was full of gold. Even Herod's temple had a lot of gold in it, all melted when AD 70 came and so on, but Solomon's temple, gold everywhere. We know from Isaiah the nations will bring their silver and gold to the temple when it's being built. And you think about man, he's hoarding all these gold ingots everywhere. You know, that's the thing right now when things are tough, you put your money into gold. Never been so high per ounce. And maybe that's all being stored away to be brought to the temple. This temple will be the most magnificent building ever seen. Well, we come back to this. When you see Brother Sully's, he has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 gates on each side. He's got that because it does tell us that in these outer buildings there are 10 chambers, and these are the chambers. So he's put a gate between each chamber. Now, some feel maybe it's 9 gates because perhaps the chamber at the end butts onto the corner tower, and at that end butts onto the corner tower, therefore you'd only have 9. Some brethren, commentators, wonder whether there might even only be 3 on each side. Where would they get that suggestion? 3, 3, 3, 3. 4 threes are? 4 threes. Get your calculator out. Quick, 4 times 3. 12. Read it. Where do you read of 12 gates? Revelation, Christ's word, spiritual temple. Of course, it's a bit bigger than this. After all, the length is 2,500 kilometres. From here to Perth, so it is a spiritual temple, but there's 3, 3, 3 gates. We're not told, it doesn't matter, but we are told a lot about each temple. Now, we're told here's the frame of the city. The west gates are never opened, permanently shut. On the east, later on, we'll find out, this is where Christ and the saints will enter into the temple, and then the gates along the east are shut and never opened. And Christ is the high priest in this temple. He's the king, and he remains there, never to leave. So those gates are shut. Only the immortals came in through the eastern gates. And in fact, all this area to here belongs to Christ. It's his domain, if you like, the literal part of the land. So you read in the record of the law of the movement. If you come over to chapter 46 and at verse 9, it says, when the people of the land, that is the Jews, those who perhaps went to the judgment seat, our children who are now adults and they're living in the land and so on, the people of the land, they shall come before Yahweh in the solemn feast. He that entereth in by way of the north gate to worship shall go out by way of the south gate. And that will include anyone coming into the temple. If they come in through the north, they go out through the south. They come in through the south, they'll go out through the north. So the law of movement is orderly. I mean, you might have 1 million people. I mean, it is a city size. I mean, they put 50,000 people at Adelaide Oval, little tiny oval. So if people are coming in, then you've got to have laws of movement. So any movement, they won't just sort of try to get out. These gates here are shut anyhow. They can't go out these gates. So if you come in the north, you go out the south. Come in the south, you go out the north. So there's a law of movement here. Let's come back to chapter 40, verse 6. Then he which cometh to the gate which looketh toward the east. Then he came to look toward the east. This is where he came in from the east. He went up the steps, 7, measured the threshold of the gate. Now the threshold is the space that lies. He came up the steps. Remember, this is a north one, so these things aren't here. And the little tables up here aren't on the east side. Came up 7 steps, and that's the threshold. That is the entrance into this wall, this building. A space that lies between the sides. Here's the opening. And you'll notice that it says, behold, there's a wall in verse 5 on the outside round about. So he measured, and the breadth of one reed and the height of one reed. And we're into all these dimensions, haven't got a clue. But actually, this is what it is. This here is a reed. It's, you won't see it at the back, but that's got 6 cubits. And so the base of this wall, of which there's a cut, which is the gate, is actually 6 cubits a reed in thickness. It's also 6 cubits a reed high. If you go into Adelaide and look at, say, the old banks and so on, when you come up into the bank, the entrance, the foundation type thing is huge. Today you don't get that with modern buildings. We go for height rather than for size and strength. So that's where the reed fits in. So he starts, he came up the 7 steps and he started to measure. And along the way then, here were the measurements. And there were 2 doors. So there were 2 entrances. So you've got a couple of little pillars here. So there's an entrance here. And it would seem probably if people coming in, they come in through this one. If they're going out, they go out through that one. So there's order of movement through the gate, through the cut in the wall, through the entrance into what's inside. And then in verse 10, chapter 40, verse 10, it said, and there were little chambers of the gate eastward, 3 on this side and 3 on that side. So when Ezekiel came into this cut, into this entrance, there were three little rooms there and 3 little rooms there. And these are the 3 rooms. There's 1 there, 2 there, 3. 1 there, 2 there, 3. 3 little rooms. And he measured the rooms. And they were 6 cubits, a reed in size. So if you take here, half the width of this hall. And if you go down, you've got a little room like this. I don't know what that is. Now, if you went into the foyer of the main building, what would be the little room? Offices. Before you get to the offices.
Reception.
Boy, we'll get past the reception.
Plate room.
Toilet.
A lift room. You press a button. Actually, it says that when Ezekiel went through, he saw the lattice at the entrance of these rooms. And I remember how staffs used to have lifts like that, had these metal doors that swung apart in front of the lattice. But I think, we're not told. But I think there are lifts. You come into this entrance, and there are 3 lifts on that side, and 3 lifts on that side that go to the big rooms. 3 stories, so you need lifts. And nowhere do you read any steps. I don't think. How would you get any movement if there's no electricity, no steps? Water. I think there'll be water used because ancient times that's how they did it, didn't they? And what was famous in Babylon? Hanging gardens. How did they get the water right up there? One of the 7 wonders of the world. They can get water anywhere, and water is powerful. I mean, we'll all soon only have wind power and water power and no coal, no gas, no whatever. the greenies get their way. I don't know. It's conjecture. But it's worth thinking about, isn't it? If you've got 9 or 11 gates, 6 lifts in each gate, a lot of lifts on the south and a lot of lifts on the north, but then there are going to be a lot of people. Interesting. Anyhow, just a few other little things. I'm supposed to stop. You'll notice in the record that it spoke about a 5 cubits. And the 5 cubits, you will see, is this distance. There's a 5, you can't read it. But the 5 cubits, he measured 6 cubits, 5 cubits, 6 cubits, 5 cubits. They're the bases of the pillars. And it said at the end of that last verse, they were palm-like pillars, carved-like palms. So that's, he's measuring the basis on which these pillars all stand. And in the day of the kingdom, the ecclesia today is the pillar and ground of the truth. And in effect, each one of us will be a pillar in symbol. And this pillar goes up and it joins with the next pillar. And all the pillars are linked right around. Hundreds of pillars in the temple. Every brother and sister won in that day. The lessons that will come out of the construction of this temple. So there's the 5 cubits. And then there was mention of 10 cubits and 13 cubits. The 13 was the height. Here it recorded that it was the length. Didn't say height, length. If you go to curtains, you say, oh, the length of curtains. So it's really, the word length is like height. So the height is 13 cubits and 10 cubits we've already seen. Oh, 10 cubits. No, I said a reed, didn't I? The reed was the base. No, that's all right. The little ruins. 10 cubits is the width of the gate. Sorry. Come down to the width. So here's our 6. Probably about here. So there's the width of one side of the gate. And then a couple of pillars and another there. So it's pretty big. The gate's pretty big. And just to finish, there's the width, 10 cubits, height, 13. So here we had 6, double it, 12, and a bit more, it's pretty high. And then right across, it said in the record, 25 cubits is the total width between palm tree and palm tree, between pillar and pillar. So with 10 here, 10 there, that's 20. You've got another 5 to go. Well, you've got these little pillars in here. There's your 25. And then it had one other 30 cubits. So when you come from the bottom of the palm up to the where the arch goes across, that's 30 cubits. So here are these other levels that you've got to reach where perhaps you go up those lifts. So when you start to look at, you probably need that diagram in your Bible, start to see this 15 and 25 and 10 and 13 and so on, put it wrong side and it starts to make sense. And if we'd had another half an hour, we could have done a lot more on that, but that's where I should stop. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Brother John, and we look forward to having you back here again in a fortnight's time. So next week for Bible class, we've got Kieran Wilson speaking on the kingdom prophecies in Micah, and the chairman for that is Ralph Eitel. And then on Sunday, We've got Steve Hauser doing the exhortation here on Sunday. The only other announcement I have is the morning tea gathering is at the Waller's House on Thursday morning at 10 a.m. and all are welcome. Is there anything else that I've missed?
Yes, one thing. Your homework. You go home and between now and a fortnight's time, get out a piece of paper, write down all those little 10, 15 and so on, and in a fortnight's time we'll begin with that slide and you'll hold up your piece of paper with your homework.